Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Husky Nation News right here on WHUS Stores 91.7 FM. Before we begin, this broadcast is in collaboration with the Daily Campus, UConn's independent and student-run newspaper, and UCTV, UConn's student-run TV station. I'm your host, Maria Shaw, and this is the news for the University of Connecticut this week. Many students found themselves cast in darkness on Tuesday around 3:30 p.m. due to a power outage that affected most of campus. Daily Campus News editor Marlise Lessing reports that the cause of the 40-minute power outage is still unknown. However, eyewitnesses reported seeing black smoke and emergency vehicles around the Engineering 2 building during the time of the outage. Many students were still in class or were on their way to class, and some professors canceled while others continued to teach. As of now, the university has not released any official announcements about this outage. You've heard of bottled water, but have you heard of boxed water? The Daily Campus's Rachel Phillipson reports Professor Hualu Zhang's marketing resource class is trying to assess if students would be open to buying water packaged in a paper box rather than traditional plastic bottles. Marketing major Susan Twist says UConn has already begun a series of eco-friendly changes. She thinks it's important to continue to explore new ways to reduce our carbon footprint. She says status quo just isn't going to cut it anymore. However, others, like biology major Shivani Doshi, are skeptical about the eco-friendliness of boxed water. Doshi points out that there will be little benefit if people continue to recycle improperly. Going on a road trip? Well, it may cost you a little bit more. UCTV's Sarah Maddox reports that Connecticut drivers may face the comeback of tolls. The tolls will exist every 6.6 miles on major highways across the state, including I-84, 91, and 95. East Hartford commuter Brandon Valdez believes the tolls are not necessary and the state should focus on managing their funds better. However, not everyone is upset by the news. Hartford commuter Gonzalo Cortez says if the money goes towards repairing roads, then the tolls may be good. If the tolls do make a comeback, they will create $1 billion in revenue a year for the state of Connecticut. When you think of a library, the last thing you think of is empty shelves. But Daily Campus staff writer Ashley Anglisano reports that students studying in the basement level of the Homer Babbage Library noticed exactly that. The books are being rearranged to accommodate for planned construction of the library. According to research and instruction librarian Steve Batt, the Dewey materials are being reorganized into the Library of Congress along with the other library materials. WHUS News correspondent Katie Seifer reports on Tarana Burke, the founder of the hashtag MeToo movement, and her visit to UConn as part of the Women's Center's keynote speaker for Sexual Assault Awareness Month, observed in April. Let's take a listen.
On April 10th, civil rights activist Tarana Burke spoke at Jorgensen about the Me Too movement, having empathy for sexual harassment survivors, and her life as an activist. Burke was invited to the University of Connecticut by the Women's Center as the keynote speaker to commemorate Sexual Assault Awareness Month, which takes place in April. Burke is best known for creating the Me Too movement in 2006 and for appearing on the 2017 cover of Time magazine as part of a group of activists called the Silence Breakers. Since hashtag MeToo took off on Twitter in 2017, Burke has traveled the world to participate in demonstrations and speak to universities as an advocate for sexual harassment survivors.
Because I've been traveling around the world, really, but mostly around the country, talking about MeToo and talking about this work for about a year and a half now. And the best part about that is I get to tell people the truth.
The truth of the Me Too story, according to Burke, began when she was 14 years old.
And I grew up in a family that was super conscious, if you will, socially conscious. And my family, my grandfather and my mother, really wrapped me in so much history and literature to make sure I was grounded in what it meant to be a black person in America. It was very important to them, to my family. And all of this information that my family gave me as a young person made me feel smart, and it made me feel knowledgeable, and it made me, actually what it did was give me what I needed, the tools I needed to identify injustice. I knew what it looked like when I saw it. I could call it out, but it didn't give me the tools to do anything about it.
As a teenager, Burke joined the 21st Century Youth Leadership Movement, which she said gave her the tools she needed to enact change. Years later, Burke created the Me Too movement to initiate conversations about gender-based and sexual-based violence. As a survivor of sexual abuse, Burke wanted to reach out to others who were struggling with their healing process, as she was, and let them know they were not alone. According to Burke, real activism takes place in the community, talking with people and making marginalized voices heard. Burke ended her talk with a call to action to UConn students. Attending her event, she warned the audience, was not enough.
All students, you should know, solutions should be built around you. You should be centered in the community healing process on this campus. And listen to me, if you're not happy, if you don't think that the protections are enough, you have the power to change it. The reason why 21st Century Youth Leadership Movement changed my life is because it was the first time adults said to me, you have power now. You don't have to wait, you don't have to graduate from college, you're going to continue to learn for the rest of your life, but you have power now.
For WHUS News, I'm Catherine Seifer.
Thank you, Katie, for that powerful story. Now, let's listen as WHUS News correspondent Kate Arellano takes time to learn more about UConn celebrity Officer Tildy.
Best memories. Wow. Did you hear that, Tildy? There's a lot of them, right?
As it happens, the Jonathans are not the only top dogs on campus. Officer Tildy, the UConn Police Department community outreach dog, has joined the ranks as one of the most esteemed pups on campus. At 3 years old, Tildy is a spunky and high-energy yellow lab and golden mix from Canine Companions for Independence, a nonprofit organization that places service dogs with people with disabilities. But according to her handler and personal companion, Officer Justin Cheney, Tildy is not your run-of-the-mill service dog.
And people ask me all the time, what's the difference between a service dog and a facility dog? And without going too much into detail, service dogs generally work one-on-one with their handler. Mm-hmm. Facility dogs tend to be put in facilities where they can work with multiple amounts of people. Mm-hmm.
When Tildy gets to work each morning, she's prepared to meet new people and provide victim assistance to those that could benefit by having her nearby when talking to law enforcement.
Tildy's kind of a one-of-a-kind type of dog where, when she has the vest on and you know, her primary functions on campus, you know, are to just meet new people and be engaging with people every single day.
After proposing the idea to his higher-ups to have a dog with special functions like Tildy's on campus, Cheney reached out to the police department at Eastern Washington University to learn more about their facility dog. But ultimately, it was not hard to win over the department here in Storrs, he says.
Well, it doesn't hurt that your chief loves dogs. he's actually a big, big dog fan, so that really helped.
Tildy helps to bridge the gap between the student body and the police department with her calm and loving demeanor, Cheney says.
Tildy's demeanor, she is very, very loving. She will, meet new people every single day, and usually she'll come right up to you and let you pet her, and she likes to shake paw and hand.
Between Huskython and basketball games, Tildy is seen interacting with the community just about everywhere, but Cheney says her favorite place is to be in the water.
We spend a lot of time during the summer, actually, at a small lake, and Tildy is one of the best swimming dogs I've ever seen.
In fact, Tildy has some intense jumping skills. Cheney took her to a dock diving location in Mansfield, and she got as far as 14 feet from the dock. But at the end of a long day of work, Tildy is like each one of us and looks forward to relaxation time at home with her family, Cheney says.
There's a lot of people around, and she's getting pet or she's engaging with a lot of people. It definitely takes a toll on her. It drains her a little bit. So as long as she gets some rest and she has some downtime where she's just, she knows she's not going to be bothered, mm-hmm. she'll be good to go for the rest of the day.
After a little over a year here on campus, the dynamic duo is ready to take on another one that's sure to be just as exciting.
So far, I think we've done a lot of good things this year, kind of looking at the whole year in a recap. We're looking to make it even better next year.
For WHUS News, I'm Kate Arellano.
Tildy, speak. Good girl. Speak.
And now the weekend weather. Don't forget your umbrella on the way out today. It'll be a rainy morning until noon with some patchy fog, with a high around 57 and a low around 47. Tomorrow, there will be some early morning showers before 8 a.m. However, after that, it's partly sunny with a high near 57. Saturday night is partly cloudy with a low around 39. Finally, Sunday brings a chance of showers after 9 a.m. However, it will be partly sunny with a high near 58. And it will be partly cloudy with a low around 40 on Sunday night. That's all the news we have for this week, but stay tuned after the break for our talk segment. I have a very special guest for my first show, and we will be talking about two of our favorite things, Taylor Swift and Shakespeare.
You're listening to WHUS, Storrs, Connecticut, 91.7 FM, Radio for the People.
And we're back. Before we begin, from this point forward, the views and opinions expressed on this WHUS News Department show are those of the hosts and guests and are not necessarily the views of the staff, management, or licensee of WHUS Radio or the University of Connecticut. Today, I am so excited to be in the studio with one of my best friends, Alyssa Grimaldi. Hey, Alyssa.
Hi. I feel like a celebrity.
Alyssa is an English major.
She's
my English major friend. And today, we will be talking about two amazing people, in my opinion, who are more similar than you may think, Taylor Swift and
Shakespeare.
Yes. So, I guess we can first talk about love story. I think that's the greatest connection right there.
Love, I agree.
Yeah, Love Story was a song written by Taylor Swift. She wrote it when I think she was around 16 or 17 years old. It was kind of her own spin on Romeo and Juliet. I remember when it was written, a lot of people kind of said that she missed the point of the play. However, me and Alyssa always talk about the fact that she may have been more on the mark than people think.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting because when people talk about Romeo and Juliet, it's always very surface level, in my opinion, and they think that they know everything about the relationship between Romeo and Juliet, but I really think there's a lot more to it than most people really get into. So I think looking back on it, Taylor Swift knew what she was saying.
Yeah, so like a lot of times with especially Romeo and Juliet, the message that people kind of say that it was promoting was this idea that these star-crossed lovers were like stupid and then they like didn't know what they were doing and they should just listen to the adults in their lives. However, reading it again, if you do read it again, you do see that the message was more how the adults in their lives were kind of not the greatest.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting, especially going from reading it as a pretty young adult, like in high school, freshman year, I read it. And then going to reading it again in college, now at a higher level of maturity, hopefully, and just knowing more about the world, I suppose. And you kind of see it less as, oh, they're so mature, they should have listened to their parents, whatever. And more as, wow, these authority figures really did not help them out here. And this was their one way of rebellion. In a world where they really had no control, especially Juliet.
Yeah, and other cool thing I think about Romeo and Juliet is how Juliet was kind of this protagonist, very active female character. One of the more active female characters, I would say, in Shakespeare's works. And that's why I love Love Story, because it kind of, it's from Juliet's, Taylor Swift, but, you know, Juliet's perspective. And I think Romeo and Juliet, the actual play, a lot of it was Juliet kind of like fighting against her father. We don't really know much about Romeo's family, but we do know a lot about Juliet herself. And it was just like a lot of almost anti-authoritarianism. But yeah.
Yeah, like at the end of the day, Juliet is not treated well by her family. Like her dad threatens to disown her if she doesn't marry Paris. So you really have a lot of this tension between them. And honestly, the only way that she can escape that is by rebelling in the way that she does.
Yeah. So then another song that I know, I personally think is very Shakespeare-esque of Taylor Swift is Look What You Made Me Do. This is a, people have very, very divided opinions on Look What You Made Me Do. I think it was a controversial song on her part. It wasn't her usual style, I would say. One of her it's from her newest album, Reputation. But I feel like it had a very like Julius Caesar-esque kind of betrayal vibe going on. What do you think?
I agree. I could definitely see the comparison there with the way that she kind of had to come back from a lot of rumors and a lot of hatred towards her in general and kind of just be like, hey, this is what you made me do.
This is what you made me do.
The
yeah.
New title.
I also feel like because in Julius Caesar, after the death of Caesar, which happens pretty early on in the play, like I was telling you a little bit earlier, even though he is not alive anymore, his ghost kind of still haunts the characters who are still alive. And they kind of have to battle with that. I felt like Taylor Swift killing the old Taylor was kind of reminiscent of the Julius Caesar, like, should you have overthrown me? Like, was it worth it in the end kind of idea?
Yeah, when you think about it, I really do see a lot of similarities between Taylor Swift and Shakespeare.
Like, as the English major in you.
I mean, you have a lot of people who don't like Taylor Swift for the sole reason that she's popular. And they feel like they have to be into more niche artists, I think. I think I feel that same pressure sometimes. Like, you don't want to like what everyone else likes. And the same with Shakespeare. Like, I know a lot of people don't read Shakespeare or don't really get into it, because it's something that you're forced to read in high school, and it's something that's really popular for like a lot of people. So you kind of feel like, oh, maybe I should get into more like smaller authors or whatever. So I think they both kind of have that like popularity that's almost a curse.
Wow, that's deep.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah, I think there's a lot that can be drawn. I mean, I can say myself, like, I enjoy Taylor Swift and I also enjoy Shakespeare, even though at first with Shakespeare, I was kind of one of the people who was like, oh, it's so popular, like, I've read it, I've done this, but now I'm taking a Shakespeare course and it's really changed the way that I view his works.
Yeah, I am too. Wow, look at that. I'm taking Intro to Shakespeare, though, and you're taking Advanced Shakespeare, so you're really into it right there.
Yeah, it's a really interesting class, but honestly, I feel like any college-level studying of Shakespeare is really helpful to understand like where he was coming from.
Yeah, like we were talking about how Shakespeare is way more woke than we give him credit for.
I agree. Honestly, I feel like he had a lot better views than most people.
Especially
during,
for the times,
yeah,
I would say.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate, like, if you look at his later works, like we were talking about this in class, remember, it's like they come from a very dark place sometimes as his works go on. And I sometimes always wonder, like, what was going on in his mind?
I know, and it's sad that we don't really have that much information about people from that time period, because a lot of stuff was destroyed and everything, but what we do have is really impressive and honestly, like, just amazing.
Yeah, and so you are really kind of, you have like interesting, I say an interesting take on Ophelia as a character. So for those who don't know, Ophelia is a character in Hamlet. She kind of, well, Alyssa, you can probably explain it better, like, who Ophelia is.
So, in the Shakespeare play, Hamlet, you have the character Ophelia. And the interesting thing about her is that she doesn't really have too much of an in-depth part within the play. She really has her one moment. She has one soliloquy that's often cut out in productions. And she ends up dying, which she drowns herself. And she goes mad because of her father's death and because of Hamlet's rejection. But I feel like there's a lot more to her than most people really see. And I think it's interesting that she's been in so many like popular art depictions, and she's just she's a very iconic female character despite her limited appearance in the play. I think that there's a lot to be looked at about who she is and who she represents, and it's interesting to me too how she's become this like almost symbol of female hysteria, which is
A whole nother research question right there. Yeah. But then how would Ophelia and like characters like Lady Macbeth or even like Viola and like Olivia from As You Like It, like how do we kind of like put those different perspectives on women in like entertainment? Like how do we put those together in like Shakespeare's kind of mind? Like what was he trying to do? Like what do you think he was trying to do there?
I don't know. I think it's very interesting that the various levels of agency he gives his different female characters, because during that time period, it wasn't really common to have, like, female protagonists, which I wouldn't say he really has a lot, but he definitely gives them a voice in some of his plays. So I think it's definitely, like, that adds to the fact that, like, he was ahead of his time in many ways.
Wow. Thanks. But yeah, so let's go back to Taylor Swift, because I love talking about Taylor Swift. Mm-hmm. And so Taylor Swift, I personally have been a fan since, like, I've always been kind of a fan, but mm-hmm. I became a real fan when Red came out.
Interesting.
I think the lyrics in those songs, like, in her songs, like, it was, like, similar to Shakespeare, like, his kind of, like, You can see when he like really, really put his effort into his plays. So I feel like a lot of lyrics and songs like really resonated, and they were very like cutting, I would say. So have you heard All Too Well by Taylor Swift?
I have.
That is one of my favorite songs. I think that's the song that I was like, wow, maybe the only reason I don't like her is because she's popular and because everybody kind of tells me that I shouldn't like her, or like that she's like basic or just not that great of a singer, things like that. But when she released Red, the song, the album itself was, I thought, amazing. She released Mean, where she kind of like responded to those accusations that she can't sing, and I just thought it was just a very powerful album. Red did not win a Grammy that year. It was nominated, but it did not win. It was very close, and I remember that she was actually very upset by it because she put a lot of emotions into the album. However, right after Red, she released 1989. You know 1989.
I do.
So 1989, I felt, was like a perfect pop album in the way that she knew what she was doing when she released it. So that she released it for the Grammy, basically, in my opinion.
I think Taylor Swift is very interesting as an artist just because, like, she's so dynamic. Like, she started out as a country artist, and she's really come so far. Like, I remember listening to her first album, and it was definitely, like, it was poppy at some points, but it was definitely very country. And I think everyone kind of thought she was going to continue in that direction, and then she just kind of, like, she's honestly, I feel like she's dabbled in a lot of genres, and I feel like she's done them all well, so.
Yeah, and she's going to be in Cats, apparently, coming up. Seeing, if we're going to talk about movies, I guess, she's going to be in Cats, not on Broadway. They're releasing a filmed version of Cats. What do you think about that?
Honestly, I feel like that sounds very interesting, and I'll have to watch it just to see how they do it.
Have you seen Cats?
I haven't, but I've seen probably like snippets of it.
I got you. I'm interested to see how they do the costumes, because those are very interesting. I feel like at that point, when like you're at that level of fame, you can kind of just do whatever you want.
I agree.
Because I don't know if I would choose to be in Cats if I was a celebrity.
Yeah.
But I think she's Taylor Swift, so she can be in Cats if she really wants to be in Cats.
I agree.
But yeah, so you also, okay, now let's jump back to Shakespeare again. Oh, I love this. So you've watched many adaptations of Hamlet.
Yeah, I'm actually working on a paper right now, so I've watched a few adaptations, and it's actually really interesting to see like the different ways that the characters are portrayed and what they choose to include and how they choose to frame things.
Yeah, so could you explain a little bit more about like the adaptations that you've watched?
Yeah, so I think one specific element that's very interesting within the adaptations is the concept of how Hamlet is portrayed, because in some he's seen as very witty, very funny, like Even though it is a dark play, he really does have his elements of cleverness. But in others, they really play up the whole melancholic, like, sad boy Hamlet.
sad boy Hamlet.
like in the Lawrence, in the Laurence Olivier version, which is really famous. It's from 1948. It is very interesting the way that Hamlet is portrayed within it. He's very sad, very melancholic. And then you have other versions of the movie where he's definitely, the humor is played up. Kenneth, I'm going to say his last name wrong, Branoff. He did a version in 1996 with Kate Winslet as Ophelia. And
we love Kate Winslet.
We do. and himself as Hamlet, because a lot of directors tend to do that. Oh. I know. Laurence Olivier did that too.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
Oh. I don't know how that makes me feel.
It is very interesting. But in that version, he really plays up the whole like humorous aspect of it.
So there's like a humorous aspect. They played up the humorous aspect in the other Kenneth Branagh.
Yeah, who knows?
What's his name?
I think it's like it's Branagh. In case anyone Branagh. Actually wants
to. Where is that from?
I don't know.
Oh, okay. So they play up the humorous aspect of it.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I'm saying. Like the portrayal of like all the different characters is so different than in the Olivia version. Like especially Ophelia, because like Kate Winslet, obviously, like she's a great actress and she does a really amazing job at being Ophelia, and she really adds a lot more dynamic to it than I would say other versions had.
So did she have more scenes in the Kenneth version?
It's interesting because Kenneth's version is actually, I think it's 4 hours long, and they don't cut any lines from the play. So in that, they include all of her lines, I believe, and they also add her into scenes where she wasn't originally depicted in the play. Like, they'll just show her in the background, or, like, they'll show, like, imagery. They do some flashbacks of her in Hamlet. It's very interesting.
That is interesting. And so which would you say is your favorite version of that you've watched, at least?
I think it's really hard to compare the two that I have, like, most recently in my memory, just because they're so different. Like, one's from 1948 and the other's from 1996. And, like, so much has changed between those times in the world of, like, film and everything. And the way they go about depicting Hamlet is just so different.
Wow. Thank you so much. Thanks so much for that analysis, Alyssa.
Thank you.
I really appreciated it. So, unfortunately, as much as I want to keep talking about Taylor Swift, especially because we could always go back to that,
yes,
we have run out of time. But thank you so much for speaking with me in the studio today. Do you want to shout out anybody?
Thank you so much for having me. I feel like I should just shout out my professor. So thank you, Evelyn. Also, shout out to my English major pal, Caitlin.
Aww.
And my boyfriend, Paul.
Aww. We love Paul. We love Caitlin,
we
too.
We do. We love them both.
So thank you again for speaking with me in the studio. Thank you to everybody listening and letting me be your host. This broadcast is in collaboration with the Daily Campus and UCTV, so a big thank you to them. And finally, let's hear it for Ethan Smith, the creator of our theme music. I've been your host, Maria Shaw, and you are listening to WHUS Stores 91.7 FM. Have an amazing spring weekend. Enjoy the events, because I know I'll be the first in line for those food trucks. See you next week.